Today's episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Curious Matter After Show. I'm Allison Hayslip, and my co-pilot here is Alyssa DeVries, and we are going to be your hosts as we take a deeper dive into this season's episodes. We're going behind the scenes to learn a little bit more about these stories and their authors, and of course, geek out on our collective love of all things sci-fi and horror. Now, tonight's episode is live on Twitch every other week. So all of you out there in the podcast land, you can come over and join us at twitch.tv/effandfunny. You get to ask questions, you get to interact with the team, and you know, who knows, maybe win a prize or two. So tonight on the show, we have the unbelievably talented star of Star Hunter, Colin Ferguson. We also have the multi-talented creator, writer, and producer of CMA, Jonathan Pezza. I feel like we are missing Colin, though. Where did the man go?
Oh, I'm right here.
I just looked over and your screen was still black and I was like, oh no, did anyone warn him we were starting?
Yeah, I got like the curtain over it. I can like, oh.
Like a fancy like that.
Yeah.
Hi, Colin. Welcome to the show. Jonathan, welcome back.
Thank you.
Congrats on a really kick-ass start to a series of five, apparently, as Alyssa told me, which is amazing. Colin, had you gotten to listen to this at all, or was this your first listen after your recording?
Oh, no, I listened to it earlier on in the week. And what I love about what Jonathan does is sort of the soundscape. When he pitched the idea in the beginning, I was like, so it's like a radio play. And he's like, no. And then he describes it. I'm like, so a radio play. And it's not. It has a soundscape that's just unbelievable. I love it.
Yeah, I know. I was really interested to see, because you even just know from the title that this is going to include so much action. And how do you portray action in audio form only? And I'm just like shocked listening to it being like, oh yeah, no, I can see every scene in my head.
Yeah, so, that's weird, isn't it? Isn't that weird?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's a lot of work.
Or amazing. yeah. So wait, Jonathan, tell us a bit about the work. Tell us about, I mean, cause you edit these episodes too, right? So,
yeah, I record, I engineer, I mix, I edit, I design, I master. It's all part of the one kind of through process. Yeah, this one was actually really cool cause we used some new technologies. We've been, doing 3D emulated space in the last few episodes. But this one, we had like a special performance rig that we could use to make the monsters. So like I could just be behind the mic going yeah, and whatever, and the monsters would have a series of different performances and calls that I could basically set up so that I could perform them live. And all the Foley's performed live now. So like I just basically go, and the the feet walk and the clothes move. And
wow.
It's what a lot of the studio films are using now, this performance software.
And what is binaural 3D emulated space?
So, well, it's the reverb and everything actually exists in a modeled engine that basically creates the room. And the room has a ceiling and a floor and all these different characteristics. We also use something called like modeled impulses, which is super technical. But so we use real reverbs from like the forest and mix that in as well. So there's a lot of different things that go into like making it feel real. And like, it's been a process over time trying to figure out like what it is that makes you go, oh my God, that's right there in front of me and I see it, and not do too much, because that's right. A really like thin line to the point where it becomes like too much and your brain can't understand everything.
And it seems like you you were able to use, I really liked the computer program who spoke to you about each of the predators they were coming across.
That was so fun.
Oh, the hunter's guide. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's actually a real performer, Blythe Renee, who's like in Borderlands and in a bunch of other stuff. But funny enough, a lot of the other voices were actually AI performers. I'm using a new system. So the other computers are actually AI, but also like the news anchor, who you wouldn't have been able to know. There's actually a couple other little parts that were performed by AI voices.
I thought they were all live performers. I wasn't saying I meant the computer program in the
the story.
Yes, but that, now hearing that there were actually AI voices, oh my gosh!
Yeah, yeah, you're smarter than I am. That's what I've learned over the course of this.
I mean, so Jonathan, you're adapting all of these stories from their original, book form, basically. When you're scripting these out, are you also scripting out the sounds that you think you're going to be using, or are you just scripting out the dialogue and then like filling in the atmosphere afterwards once you listen to it?
I mean, I almost want to let Colin answer this as the reader of the script, is like how it came to him, because I have a process, but you can speak to that, I think, a little bit better.
I can speak to that?
Yeah, well, not the writing aspect of it, but the way that I write them like screenplays. I mean, I don't really add anything else.
Yeah, you do. It reads cleanly, and it reads sort of as a normal episode of television or something would, which is so odd that it translates so differently to sound. And I'm sensitive to sound because I have hyperacusis, which means I hear everything too loud. I always thought that I just had better hearing than everybody else. And then I went to an ENT and he's like, it's not supposed to be like that. So,
wow.
So I'm very sensitive to sound, and wow. It's very pleasing to my ear to listen to, which is a testament to what Jonathan does.
Oh my gosh. I didn't even know that was a thing.
Neither did I. Just thought it was awesome. Wow. And he's like, no, you're broken. I was like, oh, that's worse.
But you're like, but broken in a good way? Yeah. A superhero, maybe?
Yeah, hopefully.
You're going to like stop a crime from happening with your supersonic hearing at some point.
Well, I was always curious why I was the only one who would put my fingers in my ears when like a police siren would go by, because it's so loud. And I was like, wow. And everyone else is like just sort of doing this. And that was the answer.
Wow. There you go.
Yeah. I have two questions. They're so off topic. But who was Nick Jonas in Jumanji? And was the other game Moncala?
Yes, the other game was Moncala.
Okay, all right.
Yes, you nailed them both, Colin.
Woo!
Get Jonathan to give you a t-shirt and a mug.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, he gets both.
Oh, man. Okay, so Colin, yes. I loved, when the episode first starts, and I knew you were in the episode, but I didn't know when you were appearing. And then it's like your voice first comes up and you're just so like, it's just so like, well, yeah, and it didn't work out again. And I was just like, there's Colin.
Yep, there we go.
But how was it? I mean, Jonathan's intro to the podcast talks about the language that it didn't even exist at that time. So it had sort of a different sci-fi vernacular to it. So Colin, what was it like for you with this very specific language style? I mean, did it feel at all familiar based on other stuff you've done, or was this a bit out of this world to use a pun?
Nice, nice. It was a bit crazy to start with because I'm not as experienced in just doing audio type stuff. And Jonathan walked me through the style of it from the very beginning. And he very kindly, he's like, hey, do you want to start with a scene? Like one of the scenes in the middle. And I'm like, no, the monologue. Let's start with the giant monologue, right? Because it's the first thing. So we started with that. And the good news was I'm now, whatever it is, like 3.5 months post-op on a shoulder surgery. But at the time I was 6 weeks and I just had a setback. So I'm not sleeping. So I wake up and I'm basically talking like this in the morning. He's like, perfect. I love it.
Don't change a thing.
So we lock that in. And then as I heal and my voice returns to its register for the next couple of weeks, he's like, yeah, so lower, you know, go back to that. So we found it in the beginning, but we went back and forth over the first paragraph for at least 10 minutes, I would say, just to find the style. And he said he's learned a lot through doing these, that like you have to indicate a little more than you would in conversation with the dialogue and enunciate a little better. Because whereas you sort of want to go, I find with current television, a little muddled, you sort of want to, just because it makes it a little realer. And with this
mumblecore.
Yeah, exactly. But not whispery, right? Like that, not that TV whisper where it's like, yeah, we better go get that. Yeah. So it was a process, and he very gently and kindly walked me through it.
Did you have a favorite part of this episode to perform?
Oh, this episode, you got me on the word this episode.
I didn't want you to spoil anything. That's why I threw it in
just
there.
At the beginning of this.
Yeah, am I allowed to
we
say
really
that?
Are.
Yeah, don't give away anything, I don't think. There's too many twists and turns.
All right.
Oh, come on.
All right, you know, okay, yeah. So my favorite thing in this episode is sort of is the cliffhanger probably on the tail end.
Yeah.
Because it does, it's, cliffhangers are so common these days. It's great to have one where the whole plot deepens instantly and the thing cracks open and then you're like, oh, this is the movie we're watching.
Right.
You know, and that was one of those cliffhangers for me.
I mean, let's talk about that. You know, Ras finding Elise is like an incredible cliffhanger. Is every episode going to end with something that shocking now, or have you set us all up, and then we're going to be like, wait, where is this going?
No, that's the reason one of the reasons I actually went for this. And you don't want to say that like off the bat, but every time you think you understand what Star Hunter is, it twists on you, and it's really a very awesome ride that's going to just go places you didn't expect. It's going to be fun.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, I'm Yusuf Dahl, and when I was 18, I was convicted of selling drugs. For the past 3 years, I've had difficulty finding housing because it is legal in the United States to discriminate against individuals that have a past drug distribution conviction on their record for life. It doesn't matter if it was a hard drug like heroin or a drug that's now legal or partially legal in many states across the country. Like marijuana. The Thurman Amendment was introduced to the Fair Housing Act in 1988 by segregationist Strom Thurmond, and it's since been used to deny housing to all people. But because people of color are disproportionately jailed for drug charges, we are affected more. My goal is to overturn this amendment to start an end to housing discrimination that unfairly targets people of color. If you would like to join this movement, please visit ThurmanAmendment.org to learn more.
A message from the Fable and Folly Network. The Fable and Folly Network supports creators of exceptional audio stories, including the one you're listening to right now. If you love our shows, we want to hear from you. Complete our listener survey at fableandfolly.com/survey. This will help us learn more about you, what you like, what you'd like to hear more of, and how we can maintain an inclusive, safe atmosphere. As a thank you for your participation, we have extras and behind-the-scenes content from your favorite shows. Fans make the network what it is. Thanks for listening, and we can't wait to hear from you. Find our listener survey at fableandfolly.com/survey today.
I'm so excited. I just want to jump in and remind chat that you can ask us questions and we will get our guests to answer them. We did get a great question from D-Man asking Colin about his process and how it was hearing about the episode. But of course, we've already discussed that. So come in with more questions.
Yeah. Sorry I beat you to your question, D-Man.
Yeah. But about that question, though, I mean, I remember when Jonathan told me about it in the beginning and with all the twists, and he told me the entire plot of all of them when we first chatted. And I listened to it and I was like, that's a lot. You know, like that's, you know, and then he said, and I read them and they're so well written. Like they're incredibly well written. And so it feels very natural as it's going. And that's, again, a credit to Jonathan. It's, yeah. he's a really good writer.
Jonathan, let's dive into the writing a bit more because you've sure. adapted this, but from the novel of the same name by Andre Norton, but I feel like you touch on it a little bit at the beginning of the intro to the podcast, but what are the changes that you have made in this adaptation?
I mean, there's a lot. I think that, it's a short novel. It's like between novella and novel length. I think a lot.
So you're like,
of the
let's make it five parts.
Yeah, exactly. it needed it because I feel like there's a twist for every part, and that's why I was like, oh, that's why.
Yeah.
But it's different in the sense that there were like ideas in there about like equality, like that the future. And the promise of the future didn't necessarily promise that everyone was going to win. And that was something that I grabbed onto right at the beginning and was like, oh, the haves and the have nots are a big part of this. And that's really relevant. And so you can take that and you can make that kernel grow into something much bigger and become the basis for the world we're in, actually. That this future is one where it's become like a land grab where the richest keep getting richer mm-hmm. and the people that aren't on these family trees in these NFOs, which is like corporations that are family based, where anybody on the family tree basically never has to work in their lifetime. They make money just by being a part of the family. And then there's everyone else who's just figuring out what they can do to survive on not just one planet that's fallen apart, but hundreds and hundreds of colonies.
I don't know how anyone could relate to that these days.
I know, right?
She says, trying to hold back tears.
Walmart, so that's what Brothers, that's Disney. One of the things that drew me into it is you're like, okay, it's got this like Jurassic Parkiness and this fun, and you're on this adventure. But it's ultimately about characters who have and characters who don't. And like, they're all stuck in situations together, you know?
Right.
And like, how does that work?
So now I definitely caught the Musk Easter egg in there. Someone said they were from the Musk clan, right?
The Musk clan, yeah.
Yes.
Yep. Sponsoring the planet.
Right. Are there any other Easter eggs in there that we may have missed? And by we, I mean,
I'd say there's a lot of tiny ones because I like writing in things that are kind of conversational back to the other sci-fi stuff that like it inspired this and then that inspired the way to adapt it. And so it's like there's little homages to Jurassic Park. There's little homages to like Predator. Like over here, like the way he says over here
with the
reverb was like, I just want to homage that moment from Predator. The Xeno rodent is described as being like just a normal like alien, like a xenomorph. It's basically a tiny xenomorph as it's described, like that gets squashed and then starts melting his shoe. There's lots of little things like that throughout. And there will be more to come. There's definitely a lot more as the world broadens out.
Awesome.
My favorite things are still coming.
Oh yeah.
Great.
His favorite critters are coming soon. Yeah. There's more critters
Yay.
Coming.
More critters. Sweet. So let's talk a bit about the recording process of this. Cause you definitely, I mean, Colin, you're the star of this episode. If Star Hunter, what? But you know, you have these three people who are on this safari with you, and there's clearly a lot of like cross chatter and conversations going on. So it felt very much like an ensemble piece in those moments. Was that still all recorded separately, like you did on Eddie Cobalt, or Colin, did you actually get to work with anyone while you were recording?
No, Jonathan refuses to allow us to mate. It's really controlling.
It's you're in your box.
Yeah, exactly.
You're in your box.
Yeah.
I'm scared if you meet, you'll have too much artistic ideas.
I can't control you in groups. No.
No, I actually asked that question when we got together the first time. I was sort of saying, how does this play out? Because it does feel like everybody's there together. And no, it's I have a little studio in my basement, more of a murder room than anything else. It used to be a grow room that the previous owners had. So it is have like my wow. Everything's painted silver, and it's awful. So I went down there, and it's very quiet. And we just went.
Oh, good.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I think it was originally built as a cannery in the basement where she would do all of her canning.
Oh, yeah.
It has all these things on the wall. I certainly hope it was for canning.
Right. Or it's legit a murder room.
Yeah. Exactly. And we just record down there, and it takes it out of your voice.
Oh,
I
yeah.
Mean, it's that maybe that's a statement that I don't know how to use my voice. Probably both.
No.
But
no, I'd say 2 or 3 hours is the most anyone can probably put in.
Yeah.
Like, okay, good.
Time. Yeah, you're not alone. I mean, we're also doing like action stuff with yelling, and like faux whisper is actually really hard on your voice.
Yeah.
So.
And sorry.
I was going to say, I actually just finished up my first like proper ongoing animated gig, which was very cool. I can't talk about it, otherwise I would, but I can talk about the process at least. And Colin, just speaking to what you were talking about, like doing something over a period of time, you know, they would play, they play previous things that I did so I could match it. And half the time I'm like, when did I say that line?
Yeah.
You know, just remembering it and remembering how you spoke when I wasn't even doing like that much of a voice, but it still was like, oh, I was in a certain register that day. And so that's where I'm at. But even just doing a 30-minute session, sometime I'd walk out of the booth and I was like exhausted.
Well, yeah. And if you and I are just starting, there's that paranoia too, because you don't meet the other actors. And so part of your brain's like, they're all better than me. Right.
Yeah. Well,
that's probably like, I'm the one you struggle with.
Yeah.
And everyone nails it.
Yeah. I'm the one that like, you have to chop up their lines to like Frankenstein something usable together. Yeah. And then when you hear it with other actors, you're like, oh, I wasn't even expecting that kind of, you know, just all the voices, how they all sound together. It's really incredible. I mean, I'm learning so much as I go along between that and this podcast, honestly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I felt that way when I listened to it myself, and there's the sort of, British voice. I was going to say there's like a nasal block British voice, which is so good.
He basically had COVID when we recorded. So that's
so he's Jack. Speaking,
that's Jack Bowman. It's great.
It's amazing. He's so good.
Yeah. He's also like one of the most experienced audio drama producers in the world.
Oh,
and
wow.
He cameoed for us in this.
So he's like, judging you voice. Constantly.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's true. He's I don't know if this is going to be. Yes, it's great. Just do it.
I mean, Jonathan, that's a great question. Like, where are you getting all these people to do these voices from? My assumption is that you just have a lot of amazing friends and you're asking them to sign on.
And family, as you keep hearing in the credits, just Pezza.
Yeah.
Well, if he had COVID and I'm post-op, probably a hospital is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, just exactly right. Yeah. It's been a process, you know. So in season one, it was like friends and family, and a lot of those people have stayed in the troupe. And as they've gotten better, and as we've learned more about doing this, like I've tried to expand roles and write roles for people and do different things. But also like this season, and with the help of the Effing Funny team, who've been wonderful, we've been starting to reach out to other people, and that's how we found Colin. And through Colin, we found Tiffany, who you guys will meet next after show, who plays Elise. And it's just a slowly expanding thing now that I think people get what it is that we're doing and that it's kind of cool, I hope.
I love the idea of having an audio drama troupe. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Like there's the Shakespearean troupe and here's the audio drama troupe. We do everything together. It's great.
They're all so amazing. Like there, we, you know, every episode I email everyone and everybody starts helping on social, and they, you know, the moment you call and you're like, I freaking missed a line or I effed something up. Can you get on your, yeah, I'm right there. You know, like, oh, it's like so many things like that. And the cast has just been so wonderful. Both of these seasons, just,
I'd love to go back to talk about the process a little bit with respect to that, because I'm not being experienced. Jonathan comes over and he sets up the mic and, you know, we set up the whole thing. Then the first time we do it, he calls and he's like, okay, download this setting, that setting, this setting, you know, do this. This is how the mic works. You got to touch this, tap this, move that. And so he's walking you through not only the performance, but also all the technical on your computer and the mic to get what it, it happens so simply that you sort of go, oh yeah, without thinking he's working two jobs at the same time, you know, and it's impressive. It was a lot.
So Jonathan, where do you find the time to do literally everything?
Yeah. I don't sleep much.
Oh.
I'm full time on an HBO show right now as a lead editor, and I'm doing this. Wow. I wake up at 5 a.m. And I edit for 5 hours prior to starting my shift. And then if I have to do weekends and nights and stuff, it's a sacrifice right now, because, you know, I think that's what it takes to put something like this out. You know, the industry doesn't quite know that we're here yet. We're starting to make reaching out. Hopefully this will actually start, you know, supporting itself so that time can be dedicated directly to it. But yeah, no, right. It's a sacrifice right now to make it work.
So this is truly, truly a passion project for you.
Oh yeah. And yeah, for my family, like, mm-hmm, I have to say, like, my wife, Mayuko, she's so amazing. And like, you know, the season is going on for months, and it's like months of me just spending all my time in the basement working on this stuff, and they've been amazing. Yeah.
So I know that there's been, and when you spoke about like the industry just is sort of starting to recognize that audio dramas are here, but I'm also seeing that there are audio dramas that are now being bought to be turned into TV shows, which is great for the creators, obviously. But then at the same time, I'm like, but are we just going to be switching, like taking a project and switching the medium it's available in? Is that possibly a goal of yours to get one of these?
Sure. I think it is, but never at the expense of creating the audio story that is the absolute version of what it can be, like pushing this medium first. It is starting to expand. I mean, there was a huge announcement today with Last Known Position, which was a number one.
Yeah, that's what
podcast.
I was talking about, because that's my buddy's show.
John, yeah. 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 John's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
I chatted with John yesterday. Yeah, they did such a great job. I think what's happening is that Hollywood is realizing that you can use audio drama as an IP farm. You can test something out here. Mm-hmm. You can see what works, what doesn't work, and then you can expand it into a visual media. I think that there's a part of that. I would love to take like Carnacki into that place, and I'd love to maybe take Second Variety into that place. But I think there's a part of that, the idea that, like, you know, you take this pre-existing IP, you make it your own in this space, but you're also, because these are meant to be movies, the idea that they could be at that other experience is like built in.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and there's something to it when you're like, it's always exciting when the industry looks at you and goes, we love what you've made, let's make it into something quote unquote bigger, because then there's validation to how good the story it is. But these audio dramas that you're putting together is an art form, an entirely different art form in and of itself. So it's almost like the validation should come from for the actual project, not just that it's a good story. Thanks for showing us it was a good story. We're going to pop it over here now.
And I think it does. I mean, we just joined with Realm and the Realm Network, and they've been super supportive, and they've been trying to make sure that audiences are aware of us that we weren't able to reach before. I mean, that's the biggest thing. It's like when people hear us, I think they're really excited about what they're getting from CMA. It's just about trying to reach those ears, because the audience is in podcasts, but the audience doesn't quite know yet that audio dramas are this way.
All I'd ever known was podcasts. And so I thought radio play, a bunch of voices like a podcast, but listening to it for the first time, you don't understand how monotonous. Like, I have a hard time listening to podcasts ad nauseum because it's the same tone.
Yeah.
You know, again and again, and mm-hmm. it just sort of hits you a little hard after a while. Whereas this is all over the place and it's much more pleasing to listen to, easier to have in as you're doing something
totally.
Else.
Totally.
Or running right. around. Yeah.
Yeah. Chat is having the same reaction as we are. Death Queen Vex, our amazing technical director, said, "It's really amazing how I can picture everything because of the acting and the background sounds. It really is an immersive experience. And to me, it feels almost more like a movie than a podcast. It really transports you."
I mean, I'm a visual artist as well as an audio mm-hmm. creator. So for me, I see everything. I know the blocking. I know where they are in space. I know what camera I kind of want to be on. Like if I'm picturing a wide shot or a close up, like, and I try to translate that into the design. Like characters aren't always right up against you. They're sometimes a little bit farther away. They feel a little bit back. As long as you can understand what's going on and feel like that space is real, that's like, that to me feels like the right way to do it. But yeah, I see every scene I have a picture. And if I feel like the goal is if somebody else gets something close to that picture.
Yeah. I mean, it's truly a medium in which you cannot take a shortcut. Like I don't know about you all, but like, you know, when you're in math class in school and they constantly tell you, you have to show your work. I was the person who was like, I know it's this. Why do I have to show how I got there? And you learn as you get older is because if you're not showing how you got there, other people aren't coming along on the journey with you, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's, you cannot skip a step in this medium. Otherwise we are not having that picture. And if we don't have that picture in our head, we don't have the story.
Yeah. When I used take it away.
I was just gonna say, like, I spend hours trying to download specific effects or finding different things, like just downloading thousands of effects at a time, trying to find things from the different libraries that that I subscribe to, different sound libraries, so that I can have access to a lot of stuff very fast.
Economy is always the hardest. It's always, you know, if you've got tons of screen time, what is this? Do I want to install an update really while I'm doing this? No, I don't. but economy is the hardest. When you have lots of screen time to tell a story, you have lots of places where you can put this in or that in or the other thing. But when you're trying to do it all in a very condensed period of time and a very, you know, just through sound, you got to nail it. You can't make mistakes or people go, huh? And they're lost.
Yeah. All right. I think we got to start wrapping this up, but
yes.
One final question to the two of you. If you had the chance to go on an alien hunting trip on an unknown planet, would you go? Colin's already like, I'm in. Soothe my shoulders, you yeah. Count me in.
Exactly. I'll go with a bad shoulder. I'm that's going to be amazing. Yeah.
I feel like I've been there. I'm going to Hawaii.
That's amazing. Oh, I'd be gone. I mean, I say that I have a son, so you know, if it's, you know, to Mars and I'm gonna be away for 3 years, I couldn't leave him for that long.
Oh yeah, that's you're too responsible,
right? But if he didn't exist, or if he hated me, then I'd be gone in a heartbeat. I'll show you, I'll disappear.
Yeah. Wow. Good. All right. Yeah, well, I think that's a great note to end on.
Absolutely.
Awesome. All right. Thank you to our guests, Colin Ferguson and Jonathan Pezza, for joining us tonight. Everyone listening, please make sure you like and subscribe wherever you are. Please follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook under the handle @CMAnthology. Or check us out online at www.curiousmatterpodcast.com. The next episode of Curious Matter Anthology, Star Hunter Part 2, will air on Realm on June 28th. And we will be back here on June 30th at 6:30 p.m. Pacific time for the next after show. So make sure you join us on twitch.tv/effinfunny. Our technical director tonight is Death Queen Vex. The Curious Matter after show is presented by Effin Funny and the Knightsville Workshop and distributed by Realm Media. So until next time, I'm Allison Hayslip.
This is Alyssa DeVries, and we've been your hosts. Stay away from water cats, and thanks so much for listening.
The Fable and Folly Network, where fiction producers flourish.
The influence of Freemasonry is undeniable, but who are these mysterious apron-wearing craftsmen, and what are they up to? For centuries, hater-ass conspiracy theorists have attempted to answer these questions.
Two Flat Earthers Kidnap a Freemason, starring Zane Schacht as Randy Dunning, Lauren Grace Thompson as Gail Kruger, and Matthew Woodcock as Walter Clay.
I just want to go on the record right now and say that I, Randy Dunning, am 100% anti-gravity.
Like, subscribe, and share your way to the truth when two Flat Earthers kidnap a Freemason.